Welcome to the Way of Success. Pastor Banky is teaching the principles of life established in the power of the Lord Jesus Christ, whose kingdom indeed reigns over all. Relax and listen, and you'll be blessed by this message.
All right, let's continue our discussions that we have been having for a while now on the matter of creating the opportunity for prosperity by reading yet again from the book of Isaiah chapter 55, from verse 6. It says, "Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return to the Lord, and he that is the Lord will have compassion on him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon." The reason God said, verse 8, is because my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Now let me stop there in verse 9, and for a moment review some of the things that we have said in previous times on this matter. Of course, from the beginning, we have established that first of all, and that has been my major emphasis, that the opportunities for prosperity, they are first created in the heart before anything can become manifested outside. That what human beings experience actually as the surrounding manifestations in their lives is a result of that which is inside their hearts. So we have been teaching and reiterating the fact again and again that we must look at what is inside our hearts. Like I read the other time from Proverbs chapter 4, said, "My son, give attention to my words, incline your ears to my saying, let them not depart from your eyes, keep them in the midst of your heart." He said, "For they are life to them that find it, and they are health." That is, if you find God's word, he said, it becomes healing to your whole body. And he now said in verse 23, he said, "Guard your heart with all diligence, because out of it flows forth the issues of life." That is, more than any other thing that you guard, you must protect your heart so that no evil thing enters in there. Because what enters your heart, having settled therein, will create things for you outside. Now, we have established that point, and we said that what makes a man a wicked man or an ungodly man, like God said here in Isaiah chapter 55, is that his thoughts are inferior to God's thoughts, and therefore his ways are inferior to God's ways. So if the man is thinking one way and is different from the way God intends for us to think, then we classify that person as an ungodly person. Now, that's why we need to get our definitions right. That's what I'm continuing on today, because we have been along the line picking certain words and getting God's definitions. Because what makes a man unrighteous is how he defines things. Are you getting what I'm trying to say? How he defines things. So when God says job, as an example, I explained that one a number of times, that if God says job, what's a job? Is it that which I wake up in the morning, dress up very nicely and go to and say to everybody, "Boy, this is where I work," and then I get paid a fat salary? God said, no, that's not what I call a job. What I call a job is the opportunity you have to exercise your gift to bless somebody else. And once you have exercised that gift, eventually men will return back to you. Because he said, "Give and it shall be given unto you." It's a spiritual principle. If you give, it will be given back to you. So that is actually what defines a job. It is not where I go and how I dress when I'm going there. Now, in the context of exercising my gift, I may have to dress in a particular fashion. But what makes it a job is that I bless somebody's life, and if I don't wake up in the morning and go there, somebody will wonder where exactly I am. Are you getting my point? For example, your car breaks down. If you can't find your mechanic, you will be in distress. That means a man is a blessing to your life. Are you getting my point? Now, when we start thinking like that, then we are picking godly thoughts, and eventually we will discover that the opportunities for prosperity will be open to us. And I'm going to begin to talk about the practical aspects of these things, hopefully if we can get there beginning from today. Now, I'm just trying to get some of those thoughts again correctly. Now, let's take another one as an example. Now, we've been talking about opportunity for prosperity. What exactly is prosperity? That's a good question to ask. When we say somebody is prospering, what exactly do you mean? You know, a few days ago, I was talking with a colleague of mine, and he was describing some of these men who go around shining shoes for people. And he said that he likes to patronize them because he sees people that wake up in the morning, they are not going out to cause trouble, but they want to just do something for people. That anytime they come across his house, he gathers all the shoes he has. Even though he doesn't plan to wear them, he wants these people to polish the shoes so that he can pay them some money. And I told him that I too, when I see one of them and I say, "Okay, come and shine my shoes," whatever he charges, I tend to double that charge when I'm paying him. That he now said that, think about it, that one of his neighbors was harassing one of the boys. He said, he called him and said, "Think about it. What if these boys were thieves? You won't be at peace. You will not be at rest." Are you getting the point I'm making? So we discussed it. Now said that the major thing, and I'm going to talk about that again today, is a fact about contentment. That these boys don't earn much, but they seem very happy with the little that they are earning. That they go around town just shining shoes for people and collecting little amounts of money. But they appear to be happy with what they are doing. Now, the point now is this. What is prosperity? That's what I'm trying to discuss. That are those boys prosperous? Now, we need to examine it. What do you mean by prosperity? Let me tell this story before I judge the issue of whether those guys are prosperous or not. But before I even tell the story, let's remember, and I need to emphasize this. If there's no contentment in your heart, you can never be said to be prosperous. Because prosperity is not decided by the amount of material things you have. Jesus said it like this, and we cannot contest that statement. He said, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of things that he possesses. It is a matter of fact, Jesus has said it, we can't contest it. A man's life, your life does not consist, that is, we cannot judge whether you are prosperous or not by the amount of things that you possess. I was having a discussion with a friend of mine some time ago. I mean, for our level in life then, we have some nice little cars, of course, used cars that most Nigerians buy. And so there was one new one we had then, that a new used car, and the car was so wonderful driving it. So we said that if we can feel like this inside this car, as old as it is, as we know that it's been used before, how do those people who buy bigger and newer ones feel inside theirs? And then he brought out a point. He said, actually, he knows that they are not happier than he is. Now, he didn't get my point. Okay, what I was saying is that I wonder what the performance of those cars are. But he brought an issue which was very nice, that they are not really happier in their cars than we are in this our little car. So I pointed out, I said, which also tells us that we are not happier in our car than the boys on the road who don't have one. Do you follow my point? That when you see the boys walking up and down, you cannot say you are happier than them just because you have something that they don't have. That's what Jesus meant when he said, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. And let me say to you, if you don't have contentment in your heart, whether you have something or not, getting that thing will never give you contentment. You may be satisfied for a few days. For example, you never had a car, and then you gathered enough money and bought an old car. All right? For the first 1 or 2 months, you are very happy. By the 3rd month, you are suddenly discovering the fact that this car is actually old and it can give a lot of faults. Where you didn't used to spend money before, you start spending money there. You are getting the point I'm making. So you discover that contentment, which you thought you will achieve, really won't stay with you. If you were not happy before you got it, you can never be happy because you got it. Because material things cannot give you everlasting happiness. No, it can just massage your soul temporarily. For a day or two, you seem to be happy. You have moved from a smaller house to a bigger one. For the first 1 year, you are happy. Then after that, you suddenly discover the fact that this house is inadequate. So you want to move to a bigger one. That is why contentment is the first thing you must go for before you can define outward prosperity. You must be happy with your current state. You must realize that if God has seen fit to place you here, then at that point in time, he has given enough spirit to you to be happy where you are. Please, I hope you're getting my point. So contentment is the first thing before we define what prosperity is. We cannot define it outwardly. It's not possible. Because actually, the word prosperity, now there are different ways we can look at it. One of the words used in the Hebrew, in the Old Testament, to define what we call sometimes to prosper or prosperity, there are many of them. One of them is the word shalom, which is actually in the Hebrew, it means peace. Are you getting my point? That is, you enter a house and say, peace be unto this house. A Jewish man will greet you, shalom. That is, but then that shalom is not something that comes to you from outward. It's something that arises from inside you that you can relate with the events of life with peace. Paul said it like this in Philippians chapter 4. He said, I have learned in whatever circumstance I am to be independent of my circumstances. That is, my joyfulness, my state of heart is not affected by what my environment says. He said, I have learned to abound. He said, I have learned how to abase. That is, I have learned to have plenty, and I have learned how to remain the same even when I have little. And that's when he now said, I can do all these things because it is Christ that strengthens me. This is the point I'm trying to make. That is, nobody can define prosperity until Christ gives him that heart to define it. That is, until Christ puts satisfaction inside your soul. Prosperity can never be defined in your life. It's not possible. Are you getting my point? So Paul said, I can do all things. You know, we say that a lot. We don't read it in the context in which Paul said it. Paul was not saying that I can run 100 meters, in 10 seconds because Christ strengthens me. Now, as a matter of fact, if Christ strengthens you, you can run 100 meters in less than 10 seconds. Paul was not trying to explain that I can do this job effectively because Christ strengthens me. But again, as a matter of fact, if Christ strengthens you, you become effective in your duties. But what he was saying in effect, effect is that if you see me having only 10 naira in my pocket, I am joyful. If you see me with 100 million naira in my bank account, it's the same level of joy you will find. Why am I like that? How come I have become independent of my circumstances? He said, it is because it is Christ that gives me the strength. That's what he was saying. Are you getting my point? At least first of all, what we mean when we're talking about prosperity again starts from inside. It is contentment. Are you getting me? Let me say it again. That what you don't have as a matter of satisfaction in the soul, nothing outside when you acquire it can give it to you. Do you get my point? Because sometimes people don't understand the gospel of Christ Jesus. They think that Jesus has come to teach people how to acquire things outside and therefore make themselves happy. Solomon said that to be happy in itself is a gift of God. That is, if a man works and he earns money and he has the opportunity to spend that money, he said to enjoy spending that money is a gift of God. You are getting the point I'm going to make here. So I've said all of these things for us to bear in mind, please. Contentment is first before we can say anything outwardly. Now let's go on talking about the word prosperity again. What does God mean when he's talking about prosperity? What he's saying is that he wants people to be in a state, all right, where they are not disturbed. That is, he doesn't wake up in the morning and a landlord is knocking on his door. Now, get what I'm saying? So that because he has not paid his rent. He doesn't wake up in the morning, goes to his office, he wants to enter the office, and discover they have locked the door because he has not paid his rent. Or that he's ill and is in hospital, and he discovers that the doctor says this drug is what you need to cure this ailment, and is unable to produce it. That is what we mean by lack of peace, lack of tranquility. Prosperity is a situation in which a man is not subject to those things. Now, please bear another thing in mind, because we've been talking about creating the opportunities for prosperity. That prosperity is not just for you yourself. That is, if I go out, because Paul said, and God is, that is in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 9, from verse 8, he says, and God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. That is, another thing about prosperity is for me not only to be able to satisfy my own needs, but that when God presents the opportunity for me to do good to somebody else, I am able to do it. Do you get the point I'm trying to make? Let's say some things more about prosperity. Prosperity means, for example, that we see the good things of life. Well, a lot of us watch TV or we have traveled abroad, and people discuss all the time that when you get to America, it's not like this. You get to London, this is the way it is. You get to Australia, this is how it is. Even South Africa, even Ghana here. We will discuss all those things. Now, what is prosperity? Prosperity is the ability to create the good things that we have seen outside somewhere in our own environment. Please notice something I've been trying to emphasize. And that is the fact that it's essentially the strength, the ability that God gives you to do good in life. That's what prosperity is. There's a story I said I was going to tell earlier, which, because of other things I was saying, I omitted to say. I read it in a book. I read it in a magazine many years ago, and I quoted it in one of my books. It's the story of one American industrialist. I don't know what that really happened, but it's a very beautiful story. Who went to the waterside one day around 11 in the morning, and he saw one poor fisherman reclining on a chair under a tree and smoking a pipe. So he asked the man simply, why are you not out fishing? The guy said, because I've already gone fishing this morning and I have caught enough fish. He said, well, it's not yet 11 o'clock in the morning. You've caught enough fish. Why don't you go back out to catch more fish? And the guy said, what am I going to do with the extra fish that I will have caught? Then the rich man told him that, what do you mean? You can collect the fish and go and sell it. So that guy said, and? Then when you've sold it, then you go and catch more fish, you sell more fish, and one day you will gather enough money to buy an extra boat. So at that point, and this guy was really interested. He said, go on. He said, okay, now I have two boats. What am I supposed to do? He said, you can now go out and catch even more fish. This is far beyond what I need as a person. The guy said, yes, you sell every extra excess fish that you have caught, and then you can buy more boats. This man was really getting interested. He said, you can even fit all your boats with outboard motors so that you can go further into the deeper waters and catch even more fish. Even more fish? The guy was looking and said, all right, I will do all of this. All this extra fish I'm going to catch, what will I do with it? The guy said, now you will become a rich man like me. The poor man said, and then? He said, then you can really, really enjoy life. That guy looked at the rich man and said, what exactly do you think I'm doing right now? That is, I'm here at 11 o'clock in the morning. I'm smoking my pipe. I'm reclining under a tree and cool breeze is blowing me. This is enjoyment the way I understand it. And you want me to go through this whole process to come back to where I am right now. He said, thank you very much. Thanks for the advice, but no, thank you. Now, when I read the story, I laughed. I said, both of them are confused as concerning the purpose of prosperity. Because one of the things that helps you to define a word is to understand the purpose of it. Now, the rich man, what's his own mistake? His mistake is that he thinks that the reason why I go through this whole process is so that I can really enjoy life. And this man proved to him that really cannot be the purpose, because right now I am totally enjoying life. This is enjoyment. Don't forget that it's a matter of personal preference. You know, one person likes one, another person likes the other. So you say, oh, this person is enjoying. The other person, no, this person is suffering. What you think is suffering for another person is enjoyment. That is, this man said, look, I am enjoying right now. You are thinking that I should take a trip, go all the way to Paris or go and shop and go to this place and go and watch the sun. You know, sometimes when I watch, you know, you are reading novels and I tell you, as people traveled to get the sun. You know, to an African, the sun is not enjoyment, it's harassment. You know, if God could shut out the sun from us for a while, we'll really, really be happy. But go to those temperate countries. When they see the sun, they virtually worship. If you watch TV, Egypt is advertising to Europeans that we are a country that offers you our sun. I said, sun, most certainly, this is not for a Nigerian, because a sun for us is harassment. I'm bringing out the point. That is, this guy said, you can now really begin to enjoy life. The man said, right now, I am enjoying life the way I understand the word enjoyment. So he missed the definition of the word prosperity, or the purpose for prosperity. Now, the other man, the poor man, again, he missed the point. He thought that fishing and catching fish is all about having enough to satisfy my needs. So I finish catching enough fish in the morning. So from morning till evening, I sit down and I don't do anything but just, again, enjoy life. Though on a smaller level, but I'm having the same amount of contentment as a man who's traveling all over the world claiming he's enjoying life. Again, he misunderstood the purpose for prosperity. So the concept in God's mind when he used the word prosperity is missing from both of them. What does God mean in the context of these two people as prosperity? One, if this guy went out to catch more fish and bought another boat, now he has to employ somebody else to man that boat. That is number one. If he bought a second boat after that, he has to employ more people to man those boats. If he had to go out into deeper waters to fish with bigger boats and have nets that we used to catch plenty of fish, then he has to employ even more people. Right now, by 10 o'clock in the morning, he has caught enough fish to satisfy his needs for the day. But then there are at least 20 other people around who don't have a job. They don't have their own boats. You are getting my point? They cannot go out and buy their boat. They don't have enough resources to buy their own boats. If he had a bigger vision, he will understand that one day I will be able to provide jobs for 100 people doing this same fishing business. And for goodness sake, it's not just about what I have sold, from which I have enough to satisfy my needs, but that fish output, is it enough for the rest of the world? You know, recently I was watching, and the price of crude has gone by the $104 to $105 per barrel, the highest ever. Now, this is the interesting part. Well, there are many reasons why it's like that. One of the reasons is because the value of the dollar itself has dropped. So they were expecting that OPEC should do something to increase the supply. This is the point I'm trying to make. Now, the price of crude internationally is very high. Now, the rest of the world, we're now saying that OPEC, you have such a good control on the amount of crude that we have to buy. So the last OPEC meeting, people were waiting that OPEC would come out and say, we have increased the quota for daily production. But OPEC came out and said, no, we have discovered that there is enough crude out there, and some people are doing some sharp practices on it, and the value of the dollar is falling. That is why it appears like the price is going up. I'm bringing out the point here. And this, I want to explain the principle. That they say it's not just about catching enough fish, but that the people there who are eating my fish, do they have enough fish? How am I outputting enough fish to keep the prices down for them? Are you getting my point? That is why I have never believed, God has helped me never to believe that funny doctrine, that all you need in life is to have one house. Interesting enough, I'm not one person that likes to have many houses. Are you getting my point? But people say that as if it's a matter of godliness that you should have one house. Imagine if my landlord had only one house. Where would I live today? I don't own a house of my own. I live in one in which I pay somebody rent. If he had only one, where will I live? Will I go back 600 kilometers away to where my father owns a house? Do you get the point I make? And I'm not able to do my ministry where God has placed me. Listen, it's not godliness to say that I want to have just one house. No, there are people who are growing up. There are people who are starting out in life. There are people who are starting businesses. They need to be able to rent offices. They need to be able to rent homes for themselves. When they travel and go to other places, maybe they just posted them somewhere. They're not going to get there and suddenly build a house. They have to rent. That is why you shouldn't think it's a matter of godliness to want to own only one house. You get my point? No, it's not. There's nothing godly about it. Now, I preaching to you, I am not one that want to own plenty of houses. But I think people should stop thinking about themselves alone. If you have built one house and God gives you enough money to build another house, make it 4 flats or 2 wing duplex or whatever it is so that other people will be able to pay. After all, the reason why rent is quite expensive in a place like ours here is because there are few houses for people to rent. Now, please, I hope you're getting what I mean by understanding purpose, understanding definitions. Because, let me say it again, once our definitions are right in our heart, then God will open the door outside for us to effectively do something so as to create prosperity. The reason why we need to get it right is that opportunities pass you every day. But because you don't have the right definition in your heart, are you getting me? You are not able to take those opportunities. Because like that fisherman I used as an example a while ago, the man felt that all there is in life is to get enough fish for myself. And therefore, I don't need to be more productive. I tell people that one of the things, you know, SARP was a very dangerous time in Nigeria. SARP was a situation in which a lot of Nigerians suffered. I was a young man just about, entering the university. I was already in university when the thing started. So I saw it live. I knew how it affected everybody around. Both of my parents were civil servants, so I understood what SARP was. But one thing, having grown up now and having looked back, I realized that SARP was actually a blessing in disguise for Nigerians. What am I trying to explain? Now, a typical civil servant those days worked from 8 in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Those who taught in schools, like my mother used to teach, they work by 2 o'clock, they are back home, they've closed. And then weekends, they don't do anything. People just go around, you know, go to church in the evenings, weekends, go from one naming ceremony to one burial ceremony, just hang around, just essentially just have a good time, you know, with life. This is the interesting part. Now, before the days of SARP, let me just say it. There were Ghanaians who came to Nigeria and they took a lot of jobs. And I noticed that almost every extra moral lessons being given were being taught by Ghanaians. The people who were willing to do extra work were the Ghanaians because they came to earn money so as to be able to send back home. But Nigerians were so relaxed. You hear stories that, if we wanted to buy those days, we'll just take a catalog and other things and they will ship them down on your salary. Now, God has no problem with giving you enough money as salary to eat. The problem is that he hates idleness. He hates people who are not productive. Now, one of the things I think SARP did for us as Nigerians was that he taught us productivity. Let me explain. That season, most civil servants, of course, they go home and rest. But when SARP set in, suddenly all the teachers in secondary school, the young men and young women, suddenly discovered that, why close at 2 o'clock? You close at 2, fine. Then between 4 and 6, you go somewhere, organize 5 to 20 students, and you teach them, they give a little bit of extra money. Now, that improved the person's economy. That is, as far as God was concerned, this man is getting more productive. He's creating more opportunities for prosperity. That is, then students who probably would have failed WASC, they ended up passing because one teacher needed extra money. Now, I don't mean that people now go around cheating and all of that. No, you have to work to pass. So because a teacher needed extra money, then he went out and created the opportunity for prosperity. Now, you're getting my point? Both for himself and also for the students that were listening to him. Now, it reminds me of what Paul said to Timothy. He said, that way you not only save yourself, you will save those who are listening to you. You are getting what I'm making. Now, that's what SARP did. Then many civil servants were closed, and in the evening, they all discovered that they had so much fertile land around them. They started farming. I remember a particular year, there was a glut of food in the environment. The year before, food was very expensive. Everybody went into the farms. The following year, there was a glut. Food became very cheap. Which is God's order. Because when God wanted to bless Samaria, he said, tomorrow, one measure of flour will be sold for one shekel. This was a place where people didn't have anything to eat. That is, he broke their captivity by making food cheap. Are you getting the point I make? So that's one thing about, when I'm talking about creating the opportunity for prosperity, that God wants people to be blessed. God wants to impact something into their lives, and that is the meaning of the word prosperity. God wants life to be easy for them. Now, we talk about health insurance. There are countries in which it works so well that once you get into hospital, you are sure you will be taken care of. No questions asked. Now, that is prosperity. Now, how do we create it in our own environment? That's what I mean when I talk about creating the opportunities for prosperity. Now, so what I've been doing thus far is to try and define that word properly. And of course, talking about prosperity and wealth, essentially we're talking about the same thing now. Now, let me just explain the word wealth again and contrast it to the word money or riches. Now, the way I understand it, wealth is not just about having money. Wealth is about creating value. In our world today, if we want to judge who is the richest man in the world, we say it's Bill Gates. Now, this is the point I'm making. You may say Bill Gates is worth maybe 40 billion, 50, whatever be the, I don't know the current worth right now, billions of dollars. The man has a lot of money, we think. But in reality, his wealth is not judged by the amount of cash he has. It's judged by the amount of impact he has had in life. What do I mean? For example, most of his wealth is the value of Microsoft. And Microsoft is known for what he has done to the lives of people around the world. How he has made their computers easier for them to use. Now, these days, many people have made their programs as good or better than that released by Microsoft. But as a matter of fact, many of the things we enjoy these days in using our personal computers were designed by people who worked in Microsoft. That is, what the man did, when you call him the richest man in the world, is that he has created more blessings for other people than most people. Now, our country is an interesting one. You just see a man who's very rich. You ask, what does he do? Nobody really knows. Just know that he goes to the village, he donates a million naira. He goes here, he donates 5 million naira. We tend to see only the charitable work that people are doing. I will have somebody spending money and use that to judge the fact that somebody is rich. But you see, wealth is not judged like that. Now listen, wealth is judged, of course. What is more important about money is the one that you are giving and not the one you are retaining. But when I'm talking about wealth, I'm talking about what has somebody created from which he is getting this amount of resources that he is spending. Do you get the point I'm making? Is it that he has built a chain of stores? Or is it that he has built a big industry? Did he build a big school? You see the man, he's standing there. They say this guy is worth 1 billion naira as an example. He said, what do you mean is worth 1 billion naira? They point to it that, remember this particular company? He said, yes, he built it. Remember this particular bank? Yes, he built it. You know this particular company? He's a major shareholder. That is, his resources have been used to create something. So when we're describing it, it is cool. He probably has about 500 students total going there. And now, though the parents of those children are paying him money, are you getting me? But then without him, they wouldn't have that quality of education. Now, the company that he owns, they probably produce a product or the other. As an example, maybe they produce computers or even food. Now, we are buying the computers, we are eating the food, we are being blessed, and we are able to improve our lives because of what he's producing. And again, if he's producing computers or food, there are thousands of people that are there doing that with him. Every month they go home with their wages. They have something that helps them to be productive in life. Remember I said earlier that with God it's very important that we are productive. It's not just that we have money. Do you get the point I'm making? But that we're actually actively outputting something into the environment. That is what is important with God. Not that we have money to spend. It's that we are outputting something. We are blessing somebody's life. We are improving things for people around. Listen, if we all think like this, you will be amazed at what our society can become. The problem we have is that a lot of us have the opposite of a prosperity mentality. We have, in reality, a poverty mentality. Now, for example, if you look at the book of Revelations chapter 3, the Lord sent to the people of this church of in Laodicea. He said, you think you are rich. Now, listen. But you don't realize that in actual fact, you are wretched, miserable, and poor. This is the point I'm making. That is, we may think sometimes that we have a prosperity mentality, but Jesus is saying we actually have a poverty mentality. So you think, you see people who have a lot of money, they are spending money, and we think that's what wealth is. You want to go out, maybe you get an appointment in a government office, because you're involved in politics, they give you a government appointment. Now, therefore, you think that my opportunity for prosperity has come. What do you mean by my opportunity for prosperity? Now I can award contracts and get kicked back. I can overinflate the contracts and get a cut of it. People will be glad to do me favors. People will be giving me gifts left, right, and center. Then you have a poverty mentality. Because a poor man is the one that's always trying to take. Is the one that's trying to take. What is real prosperity mentality? You say like Solomon, God, look at this opportunity I've been given. Now I'm king. I am a local government counselor. I'm a local government chairman. I am a commissioner. I am this. I am that. I am a commissioner of police. Whatever it is that I have become, I say, God, give me wisdom so that I can bless the people that you have put me in charge over. The people that you have put me out there to represent. Give me the wisdom. Now, it doesn't matter that I leave the office not having as much money as my colleagues who left before me. It doesn't matter that I leave the office poorer than I stepped in, because it was said concerning Jimmy Carter, the then American president, that when he stopped being president, he was worth less than $1 million. He was a multimillionaire when he entered the office as president. But now, if you mention the name Jimmy Carter, you all know him. Are you getting my point? He's an ambassador of goodwill all over the world, going around solving problems in different places. He's a rich man in God's esteem. Though he became poorer for being president, physically speaking, but in reality, the man is rich. So if you think like, okay, I don't have to even be richer when I leave the office. But by the time I'm leaving, people must know that a man came. Are you getting my point? That is because of the positive impact that will have made in their infrastructure, in their policies, in the environment, in how people are able to enjoy their lives. Now, that is real prosperity mentality. And if you think like that, you are beginning to get in sync with God's ideas, and then you will discover that great power will be made available for you to actually go out and go and create the opportunities for prosperity. And this interesting part, you will end up being richer than you ever imagined that you'll ever be. Do you get the point?
The Way of Success is a production of Kingdom Word Ministries, a non-denominational teaching ministry based in Enugu, Nigeria. For more information and for free access to Pastor Banky's audio messages, books, and other materials, log on to kingdomword-ng.org. Our mailing address is mails@kingdomword-ng.org or PO Box 2273, Enugu, Nigeria.